This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. I'm sure I put in with me Kusu Chuang and Brian Finnes with top business stories of the day. We begin with Bank Negara. Yesterday, Bank Negara said the outlook for domestic financial stability in 2018, is expected to remain intact thanks to sound financial institutions and orderly local financial markets. This was the assessment of Bank Negara's Financial Stability Committee, which meets four times a year to assess the risks to the stability of the financial sector.
Yeah, obviously this committee is extremely important to the local economy because they use a whole bunch of metrics to assess the kind of stuff that is risk, you know, potentially putting the financial system in risk. They also look at the potential risks to the financial intermediation process, including the orderly function of money markets and forex markets. So it's the banking system and it's the transactions and all that kind of stuff. So in summation, what they found, I think, Sharad, is the fact that while local conditions are quite sound, it's the global financial markets landscape which has changed. And I think that was what happened in the last meeting.
Absolutely, yeah? The last meeting, which was in November 2017.
Yeah, so one of the things that's happened is essentially that there's increased global market financial market volatility because of uncertainties, particularly regarding the pace of interest rate normalization in advanced economies. Now, there's also the prospect of rising trade tensions and also volatile commodity price movements. So the external developments here are going to cause bouts of high volatility amid two-way capital flows. So essentially, in short, what we are looking at really is strong local economy will cushion the blows from some external worries that we have.
You know how we spoke to Vasu Menon this morning, right? And basically one of the big issues behind this whole move towards risk-off in markets, basically, is this whole prospect of a looming trade war between the Americans and the Chinese. And that means essentially the tariffs that Trump is going to place on Chinese imports, right? And this kind of stuff is basically hurting market sentiment. It's hurting the US dollar. And it's possibly the biggest impediment or the biggest headwind to financial market volatility or risk appetites at this point in time.
You know, what's interesting is I did a grill with an economist, Elsa de Michaud, who talks about the local economy, and she and the school of thought that she comes from breaks it down to three components. She said the three components of the local economy make it more resilient in the face of external pressure. So she talks about local capital, foreign capital, as well as the state. The state has an important role to play in regulating how the local economy deals with these external pressures.
Yeah, so one of the ways I suppose that we are insulated from that in terms of local equity participation is the fact that local institutional funds actually own significant portions of large cap stocks. So essentially then you're going to have less volatile movements because of, you know, hot money flowing in and out of the economy.
Yeah, you've got the PNBs, the Coops, the EPFs, the LTATs, the you know, big GLICs. It's a two-way sword, right? It's a two-way street. Might lend the stability to the system.
Sword.
Correct. That's what I meant. But while it might lend some stability, it also impedes private investment, but, you know, according to some arguments. But,
yeah, so the crowding out, really
correct,
the crowding
out effect. But just going back to the Bank Negara report, they're actually pointing out that the debt servicing capacity of households remains intact. So despite elevated household debt to GDP ratios of around about in the mid 80 percentile points to GDP, Bank Negara, using their metrics, are saying that people, you know, basically consumers in Malaysia, are able to service their debts. They're also pointing out that household financial assets are high and growing faster than debt.
And that's a good key,
which is interesting.
Yeah, because essentially then either you're taking on good debt and your asset base is increasing. And so there's less risk then to banks in terms of impairments of loans.
Right. What about corporate Malaysia? What is the outlook there?
Okay, so corporate Malaysia, according to Bank Negara, is saying that leverage is increasing, but it's increasing in tandem with investment activity. And we've seen this in the local production numbers, the IPIs and what have yous. So it's not as if they're taking undue risks, and they're taking risks in terms of borrowing more in line with their economic, their investment plans. So in short, both households and corporations are in fine fettle. Even in the property market, right, they're saying that banks are still lending for to buy homes, especially for first-time home buyers, and approval rates at 73%. Which again is interesting. It goes kind of against the grain of what anecdotal evidence
tells us. Yeah,
because
the property developers always tell us that essentially the banks are not lending enough money. 73% is quite a high number. But the picture in the housing market is actually quite mixed, because the FSC said it will continue to monitor the oversupply situation in a couple of key sectors: the high-end, high-rise residential property sector, the office sector, and then we also the shopping complex sector. And banks are, of course, still cautious about lending.
What about cars? I mean, cars are also one of the big ticket items for households, apart from, you know, their house loans.
Yeah, so we looked at some stories from the internet, and we found that basically Pernod are doing really well. Pernod, of course, you know, they make Myvi's and Elzas. They have a 41% share of the local market. But what's interesting is that they're selling cars like there's no tomorrow. I mean, they've taken bookings for, what, 60,000 Myvi's?
And that doesn't stop there. In the car business, Mercedes... In fact, globally, if you look at a global perspective, 60 months of growth.
Correct. 60 months of record sales.
Record sales, month on month. And also in Malaysia, they've also been, they had record sales last year of over 12,000 units.
Yeah.
Okay, before we end, wrap up the Bank Negara story, aren't they also looking at criminal activity?
Yeah, so I mean, they're always on the lookout for cybersecurity threats. And obviously, when you look at the integrity of the financial system, it's all about the whole hacker data, you know, omnipresent, and a threat. This is very real because, as has been shown so many times through the years by DDoS attacks, this is one of the big looming impediments to the integrity of the financial system.
And also a threat to the integrity of the financial system, which they are looking at, is really all those illegal financing schemes, you know, yeah. JJPTR. The
Geneva Gold.
Yeah. So those are an area that the FSC is also looking at.
Okay, let's move on to the retail industry. Numbers are out. The retail sales rose some 3.1% in the fourth quarter of last year, fueled by school holidays and festive spending.
Which is not a lot, because when you analyse the GDP in Malaysia, it's around about 5.5% to 6%, according to official numbers. And this is basically... The retail industry is growing at half the pace of the country, right? So obviously that's not very good. And, we saw a couple of days ago, Malay Mail Online, in fact last night, saying that they ran with a headline called Mall Meltdown, right? And this is kind of like true, because people are migrating away from malls. Physical footfall in malls is dropping, and people are migrating online. So according to this data from Financial Times, which Malay Mail cited, other than the five premier malls in the country, the Mid-Valley, there's the Wan Utama, the Sunway Pyramid, I think, Pavilion?
Pavilion, KLCC.
Yep. Other than these five, which are kind of like impervious to the risk at this point in time, people are not going to the malls, and occupancy rates are 40%.
Yeah, essentially, if you strip that out, it's just 40%.
Yeah.
Well, what about the subsectors of the retail? Do we have any numbers on that?
Well, yeah. Hypermalls, they're falling.
Supermarkets and
so hypermarkets. Supermarkets and hypermarket sector is falling. In fact, now this is reflected for the entire 2017 numbers, negative growth rate of 0.2%. So, in fact, two major players, Giant Group and Parkson, Giant shut down five stores last year. Parkson shut down two stores.
We just saw on the internet, so it's not just a Malaysian phenomenon, because in the US, what is that? Toys R Us, they're shutting stores in America and in Europe as well, in the UK, right?
Yeah, and they're going to be shedding some, I think the report says, some 33,000 jobs.
Yeah.
But in Asia and some other regions of the world, they're planning to sell off Toys R Us.
Yeah.
But
right?
In Britain, I think they're closing. About 3,000 jobs are on the line in Britain from the closures.
Yeah, so this, the latest and most recent manifestation of tech disruption, right? I mean, we saw all those years ago, Barnes & Noble shutting their stores, Amazon coming in, and Amazon's Jeff Bezos. You know what his net worth is now? $125 billion. He's overtaken both Warren Buffett, Carlos Slim, and as well as Bill Gates. Yeah. Crazy.
I'm not a parent. I don't have children, and I don't care about nephews and nieces, clearly. So I don't go to Toys R Us. Do we have a Toys R Us in Malaysia?
Well,
yes,
you're just
do.
A big child, aren't you, Sharad? I'm sure you
would never go.
Children love to spend time in Toys R Us.
But not this adult. That's all I'm saying.
But the thing is, what the Retail Chain Association of Malaysia, they don't really monitor online e-commerce sales, which we know is really booming. So there's a huge migration going on from traditional brick-and-mortar stores to online.
Yeah, and also one of the key things, besides the migration to e-commerce, some of the key things that are affecting the retail sector is essentially one, consumers have less money to spend because of the rising cost of living. Now, there's also a high level of household debt, which is over 85%. So that's, I mean, another, you know, those are some other reasons as to why, you know, the challenges of, you know, retail industry is facing so many challenges.
Yeah, just one more angle, if you guys haven't already got enough. You know, how Nestle, you know how much Nestle shares in Malaysia are worth now? 125 bucks, right? Their market cap is 36 billion ringgit. And the, you know, the super big cap, so-called, 25, 30 names, odd. They've really flown. And basically, so Nestle, right? You know what Nestle are like. They sell Milo. They sell, I think, Maggie Mee. Yeah, Nescafe. It's a consumer stock. And they're really doing well by packaging these products online via delivery via Lazada and all the online stores, Shopee and stuff like that. Their stuff may not be moving as fast from the speed marts of this world like they used to.
Well, dietitians might have a thing to say about this. Correct.
But they've taken, you see, right? the likes of Nestle and all that has basically embraced this. They've taken that omni-channel approach in terms of marketing.
Yeah.
And so they're pushing, it doesn't matter to them if the retail group is not, a retail sector is not selling it. They're pushing it through online commerce.
Okay, we're coming up to the top of the hour. We'll have the news. We'll be back with the opening numbers in the stock market and more news and analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.